recording. All right, welcome back to another episode of Work in Programming. This week I am joined by Arunoda Susiripala, Sri Lankan developer, prolific in the open source world. He's been working with Meteor.js. He is recently working with Vercel and has since moved on to work on his own projects and blog and whatnot. And so I'm really excited to get a chance to sit down with you and talk. Thanks for joining me.
Okay, yeah, that's really cool. And thanks for for the great introduction. That's really nice to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so the way that I had a first heard of you was when I was working on Meteor.js projects. And I think almost every really helpful tutorial or guide that I found came from Kadira on the blog, and most of the time it was from you in the chat rooms and whatnot. So I'd love to kind of get a picture of how you got started in web development, and then also how did that lead into you working on Meteor.js?
Right, it's about getting started web development. I did some work with. Have you heard about there's a project, there's an application called Dreamweaver. I think it was I started my dynamic web apps development using Dreamweaver. It's just like a drag and drop thing. So I didn't do any code at that time. Mm-hmm. So then I started learning Java at the school level. I think I'm at the university level. No, just before that, I started working with PHP. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was the main difference. I started coding web programming, and it was really fun at that time.
And were you doing WordPress or just
No, just PHP, creating things from scratch. Maybe that's why I trying to dig deeper and trying to understand things, because mm-hmm. I started with pure frameworks. Then later on, I try to contribute. And then I got into open source. So when I was at the university, I participated in a program called Google Summer of Code. It's a 3-month program. So you paired with open source project. Mm-hmm. And then you have some chance to implement the real working feature. And mm-hmm. then, yeah, and that was my real experience with the open source community. I worked with Joomla one time. And then after that, I work with a project called status.net. I think right now it's not there. It's a open source version of Twitter. I think they're dead now. So they have a public version called Identica. Maybe you have heard about that.
I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty old. I think it's 2004, I guess, maybe. Maybe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that was my first introduction to open source. Then after that, I discovered Node.js. And then, I was introduced to JavaScript world and trying new frameworks and, experimenting with things. Yeah.
Very cool. And then, so what year were you getting into Node.js? Because it sounds like you got started with all of this, quite early. So you must have
been... Yeah. I don't exactly remember the year, but I think really early days, I remember Ryan Dahl is giving an introduction to the Node.js. He was creating a simple web server in a single mm-hmm. file, and you run up. Yeah, it was amazing at that time.
Yeah,
at that time, if you want to create a web server, you need to have a dedicated server like Apache mm-hmm. in your PHP world and doing some PHP stuff. And then if you want Java stuff, then you have to run a Tomcat kind of server. Mm. And there are some standalone versions, but then it was really hard to work with. But with Node.js, it was really amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, you can get started with an entire server from just a single JavaScript file.
It's like really amazing things.
That's really cool. And then so once you got into Node, so it sounds like you were contributing to open source your entire career. How did you have the confidence to do that? Or is it just you just wanted to work on something? And
I think apart from open source project, I work with some of my projects locally. I work with some like SMS platform and create some stuff. So I was trying to like, maybe I like to like contribute and I try to like write blog posts and so on. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the reason like I'm trying to do things openly, because I don't really worry about like code quality and if someone's trying to judge me looking at the code. I'm not really worried about that, and so that's a reason maybe.
Yeah, no, I like that, because yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, yeah, if you're a bit of a perfectionist, sometimes it can, because yeah, I've found it very hard to try and get into that sort of stuff, probably just because I'm afraid of being judged, but it's good to just get started, I guess.
I think no one really actually trying to blame you if you do something wrong. I think everyone does wrong things anyway, so then it's totally fine to like try to do stuff. Maybe if you think you're doing something wrong, maybe there's something really new, and maybe a new way of doing things, so then it doesn't matter, like just maybe you try to open source everything and then speak, write blog posts, and so
I love it. So when you started Kadira, had you already been working with Meteor at that time?
I think how we start Kadira is, mm-hmm. I didn't have any plans to like create Kadira when I was working with Meteor community. Mm-hmm. I was doing a lot of freelance work at that time. Mm-hmm. So then one of my clients want to like create an app using Meteor.js. At the same time, I was like trying to do something new. So then I took it's a really good opportunity. So I started working with that project and I learned Meteor. Then I tried to learn. So while I'm working on the project, then I had to like dig deeper and try to find things. And there are some problems. Then I try to fix them, create projects, and yeah, maybe blog post. And that's it. It's completely a natural thing. And then after a few months, I really want to like, I really like working with the community. And so then I want to like focus my whole time working with the open source Meteor projects, mm-hmm. Rather than doing the client work. So then I decided that. That's why I started the blog website called Meteor Hacks. Mm-hmm. I was trying to contribute and trying to blog post and so on. So then at some point, I need some money to like live, right? So then I was thinking maybe I can do something. So yeah, that's why we started Kadira. Originally, I wanted to create a hosting platform at that time. But then, so MDG, the company behind Meteor, they're already working with the hosting project. Mm-hmm. So then it's like a conflict. So then I'm a small guy and I'm trying to work with the community. So I think it was not a really good thing to do. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to win if you're trying to compete with the organization that you're working with. So then I took the other approach and then create the performance monitoring platform. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's history.
Yeah. And then I guess, so when you were building the performance monitoring system, did you find a lot of early success with it just based off of like, I guess the, you know, the Meteor Hacks reputation and being kind of integral in the community?
Yeah, I think it's not just product itself. I think it has to do with the like community, because I was well known at that time. Mm-hmm. So then, I think it's both, like it's partly it's the community and I know how things work in the Meteor.js and how things like that, then I use that knowledge to like create a tool. It's both. I cannot like say it's 50% community and 50% code or something like that, but I think it's both.
Yeah, definitely, that makes sense. And then I guess so the company you ran it for a couple of years, and then you wound up selling the APM product to MDG, or how did that wind up?
Right. So it's a very interesting story. So you know, like MDG, after a few years of Meteor experiment, mm-hmm. or just a project, so they started working with Apollo. So then, so everyone is trying to work with the GraphQL and trying to create apps using JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And then seems like people really don't want to use Meteor 100% of time. So some people want to like create another version of the, I mean, using plain JavaScript frameworks. So maybe that's the reason they start focus more on the Apollo. So then I was thinking what else I can do. So then basically my APM is based on Meteor platform. So then if that platform goes down, so then I had to like pivot that company into some other place. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason. But I didn't have the courage at that time to like do something like that, start again. So then I thought it's a good idea to work with MDG to try to do something. So they really helped me to like they actually took some of the code base, and I think they ran it for maybe a couple of years. I really don't know about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. I think they helped me on that way. So I yeah.
And then I guess, so at that time when you gave them over like the code base, you didn't continue maintaining that. I guess you changed your focus entirely.
Yeah, exactly. At that time I really like want to change what I do. Actually I was already doing that way before, I think maybe 2-3 months ago at that time. So then yeah, I want to keep focus on the new things I do. Yeah, that's the reason.
And then is that around the time when you started building out Storybook?
Yeah, I think it's a bit earlier, I guess. I think at the same time, maybe. So when MDG is focusing on Apollo, so I was thinking like I should like try to focus on some other thing. Mm-hmm. Even before, like I had like idea to like create this kind of like a UI component like environment. And it's not 100% new idea. I think we had something for the Meteor community. I don't really remember the project. It was from the guys at so they had a company recently acquired by BrowserStack. What's that company? Let me think. Percy. So the Percy JS. So before that company, they was doing something called Respond. I don't exactly remember the name. Maybe Respondly or something like that. So they had like a version of Storybook for the Unity community. So I took that idea and then tried to create a generic tool for the React ecosystem. I did some changes for sure, like add some new ideas like knobs. We started using that then. And I had a plan to like create a commercial product out of that. But then I didn't really do that, and I was changing my focus into something else.
Mm-hmm. I remember because I remember when I first saw Storybook, I liked the idea, but then I saw I remember seeing like all of the commercial product and seeing how it was like hosted. And I was like, oh, okay, so this is for like bigger companies. So I didn't actually work with it off the bat. I played around with it a little bit, and I liked that you could put your components in there. I think early on, I didn't get it, but a lot of people really, really love the project. I remember like, it was kind of like, it just makes your code better, right? Like you can kind of build your UI components separately. Cause prior to that, if you're working on say a Meteor app with React components, you're spinning up your entire Meteor server with all its dependencies. And then like seeing your UI rebuild and re-render as you're going. And then if you're trying to build out like a new flow entirely, I mean, it feels like it's fairly simple. Like it's a basic idea, but it made a huge difference in like development workflow, I guess, for UI development.
Yeah, of course, definitely.
Yeah, and then how did because so I know that originally you had started it as a like a commercial product, but you you open sourced it off the bat and then maintained it. From your team, or was it like V1, was that not open source?
Oh, which commercial product?
Storybook.
We didn't actually create this commercial product. It's just the idea. We had some idea to create a commercial product, but I think we did like a Storybook. I don't remember. So we did like a kind of MVP, I think after a few months of Storybook. But then I think we didn't actually like continue that project. I don't exactly remember why we didn't do that, because I was working, I was focused more on the next day's kind of thing, maybe.
So I guess after that is when you, when you said that you were moving on to something new, is that when you moved on to working with Purcell, or did you, I guess at the time Zeit, or did you?
Yeah, I think at the same time, I didn't have any plans to join Purcell at exactly that time. I was working with Next.js. I thought like Next.js really cool project, and then it may be the next big thing in the JavaScript community. It was really early that time, so nobody really cares about that. so then I took the challenge. Maybe I started working with Next and I'm trying to contribute. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, I was looking for a job. Then I talked to Roush G, and he was really happy to like take me. Then I started working with Next. Yeah, after that.
Very cool. And then when you were at Zeit, you were maintaining Next, but was that your full time job or?
Yes and no. Initially, it was my full time job. I was working with Next, maintaining Next about maybe 1 year or maybe 1.5 years. Mm-hmm. Then I was like introduced to the core Purcell product, Zeit product, and then I was maintaining some backend stuff. So that's at least some front end work as well, but mainly I was working on some core product in Purcell. Yeah, then I didn't had time to like work on the Next stuff. So then Tim Tok took over the project, and he simply like make it really awesome. And
I guess Next has changed quite a bit since then, but it's at its core, it's kind of still the same platform. It's like server side rendering made easy. And you know, now all the fancy stuff that makes it just like the full-fledged Jamstack framework that we have now.
I need to add one thing about Next. I think Next is not exactly about server-side rendering like platform. I think that was the it's about how we actually sell the framework earlier. Mm. Actually, about Next, it's not about the server-side rendering approach. It took so popular. I think it's very simple to use the framework. So you don't really have to like use Redux to like fetch data and to do stuff, because you can simply fetch data and then try to render pages. And I like the experience you had with PHP. Yeah. I think it's a whole experience rather than the server-side rendering approach. And that's why Next took over like competing with all other projects. That's how I think about it. It's not about the server-side rendering aspect, but the experience, whole experience you got.
True. Yeah, I like that. That's very true. So then you chose to leave Next earlier this year.
Yes.
So what are you working on now? And what do you, what is your vision for the, because I know that you're getting into open source and you're also doing some blogging. Like I've started following you on DevTO, and you've got some interesting stuff about Lighthouse, and you're kind of exploring the whole ecosystem. I'd love to hear more about what you're working on.
Yeah, sure. So basically, I was working with Purcell for like I think almost 4 years, and I'm honestly I didn't have much time to like work on the open source community at that time. So it's not about the any policy with Purcell, but I personally was enjoying working with what I do, and I lost interest actually. It's not the right term, but I don't know how to explain that. So I didn't have time to work on open source projects, but at the same time, I think like I should have done something. Now actually there are so many cool things. Maybe I could part of some of those things. So then I missed a lot of stuff. Maybe 3 years. I was thinking like, okay, now it's time to like, okay, stop what I was doing at Purcell. So I need something new. So that's why I left. I want to try something new. So then about what I do right now. I have like kind of two goals. So when I was leaving Purcell, the first thing is education. I had some ideas about how education should be and how we can teach people. So that's why I created this kind of platform. I don't know, like called Get Started, and try to expose my like education ideas and how, mm-hmm. how we can teach. So that's the whole purpose. And I'm creating an exchange course based out of that. So that's whole experiment. And that's what I'm trying to do right now. At the same time, I was thinking like web development should be much easier. Like right now, for example, like if you want to build an application, maybe simple blog, maybe add some comment system. So then you have to like fetch data, and you need to like, you know, you need to do all the caching. Maybe there are some projects like SWR to like make them simple, but still you have to make some queries and try to do stuff. And then it's really hard. Like if you are coming into the web development right now, and I think it was really hard to like do something. You had to learn GraphQL maybe. Mm-hmm. You had to like work about caching and how you can communicate the APIs and so on. And it's really hard. Like, so, but at the same time, like, so you do the same thing over and over again. So I think there's a real opportunity there to try to fix that. I don't know how, and there are some good projects out there trying to do right now. And I want to mention that about open source world. I tried quite a few technologies in the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting projects I saw is called GQLess. So basically the idea is you have a GraphQL schema. Mm-hmm. And then, so basically with this code generation tool, so they can actually generate the whole client library for you. So then you can simply forget about GraphQL and try to interact with JavaScript and create the UI component. You simply like fetching data by simply using the schema kind of thing. A schema, mm-hmm. I mean like in JavaScript. So it's really interesting project. And I think we need more projects like that, like trying to like simplify things. Mm-hmm. And it's not exactly like abstracting things away, but we're trying to simplify things and let things be so simple. Yeah, that's a really interesting project. And there are some like, you know, like Webflow, and they do really great stuff. Like you don't really want to do stuff. But I think at the same time, we need some sort of open source tools like that. And not exactly like Webflow clone. When you're coding, we choose to code because of the reason. Like, we can do whatever we want to do. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there should be a way to reuse things. I mean, components level as well, like whole functionality level.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that would be like individual packages that kind of repurpose, like let's say a login flow or a comment section?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. Let's say you are building a let's say you are building like a really big commercial product. Mm-hmm. Maybe let's imagine what we're trying to like imagine. Anyway, maybe Facebook. No, that's too big. If you're working some big project, maybe you need a blog, and then you need a comment system, and definitely you need a login system, and maybe you need to like create some generic tables kind of thing, or like dashboard kind of things. Mm-hmm. So then, you don't really have to like do a lot of things with this ideal framework. So basically, if you need a login framework, you simply get some login component, and then it comes with all the like database logic and how to like store things and also the UI kind of thing, and you can have like comment blogging pages kind of thing, everything there. Then if you want like change the data, so let's say it's using a Firebase, but let's say your company doesn't want to use Firebase, they want to use something else. Let's say they want to use MongoDB. So then you can simply change that data layer and change the data layer for everything. Mm-hmm. And also for the UI framework, let's say right now you are using like Chakra UI, just the comes in, then you don't want to like, you want to like do something custom, and then you can simply using some other UI like layer, you can simply replace the theme UI layer, and then it updates everything. And actually it's a really easy way to like create apps. At the same time, let's say you want to add new functionality, you can simply start extending stuff you have, this open source, I mean, community components, or maybe you can create something new from the scratch. I like to it's a rough idea. I like to call about it as like a zero framework approach. So basically you don't have a framework, like it's not a framework actually, but maybe you start with some components and are trying to be provided by the framework, but maybe after 5 years of runtime, so there's no like framework code at all. So it's just the completely new things you wrote.
Because it kind of sounds, in a way, it sounds similar to like how Meteor.js had, like, you know, you could install the auth flow and it's, you know, you install auth and you've just got it working and you've got a user-based system. Or if you want to install like migrations, you've just installed the framework and then you have migrations. But it's like, it's that, but almost split out by vertical, I guess. Or
yeah. Yeah, I think it has some of course it has some roots to Meteor for sure. I think Meteor is the easiest framework. If you want to build something quickly and definitely you should check out Meteor. Like it's the framework to go. I think you cannot beat that thing. Like there's no other framework for something like that. I still believe that. So then, and there are some problems with that framework as well. So we already know about that. I think, and also it's, and I know like personally, and I know with the community members, like Meteor has actually changed a lot, and they have now like a lot of capabilities and a lot of like database support. And yeah, I think, they did some good things as well in these times, but it's different.
Yeah, it's definitely changed quite a bit. I haven't used the latest versions, but I've heard that they've kind of integrated the GraphQL stuff and you can use a different database than just Mongo now. And I think they've moved more towards, because I remember when I was working with it, we were trying to use React for the entire application. But what we ended up finding was we had tied everything to like the data binding. So we would have like the real time effect, but in the application I was working on it, we really didn't need it. And it kind of felt like we were fighting against it all the time, trying to force it from like, you know, updating the database automatically. And like, we're just like, okay, no, we just want to have a post request to save it. But I think some of the resources actually from Kadira and Meteor Hacks actually had quite a bit of you know, stuff around like separating the UI layer a bit, and it made using all of that like kind of makes things a little bit easier to deal with. And then like, yeah, Meteor itself seems like it's going in a really interesting direction. I haven't worked with it myself for a while, but
right. And I think you made a really interesting point about real time. I think real time is really cool, and that was a core selling point of Meteor at that time. But in practice, I think it's really hard to do, like to make things work real time. I think still there's no any database project that does that real time thing really good. Other than Firebase does that really well, but I think no other framework with Postgres and doing that. So I think real time is hard to implement, and there are a lot of challenges. And that's so. Then easiest approach is like prefetch, and poll. So I think that's the approach we took with Vercel and dashboard. When you're building the dashboard, you could actually fetch things. That simplifies everything. So I think we can forget about real time approach, and then we can simplify a lot of things if we do that. So that's something we could think about.
Yeah, the SWR idea seems like it solves a lot of those issues without necessarily, like, I think you're still technically polling, but like the fact that it hooks into different lifecycle methods and like user interactions to force the updates and stuff makes a lot more sense versus having your server have to push it out. Because I know that, like, you know, if you have WebSocket connections, you can only open so many before you need to split out the server into another instance, and then that causes scaling issues, and it's kind of like a two-way problem.
Yeah, I think so. I think eventually, like, it will get fixed. I think one of the blocker could be one thing from the database side, and the other thing would be from the deployment side, especially Lambdas. Right now, they don't have like streaming support, so then it's really hard to do WebSocket kind of thing. So then I think both fix those things, and I think in the future, I don't know how long, but like you could see real time everything. But anyway, like for the end user, it doesn't matter sometimes. Like sometimes real time projects are really useful. Like if you're building a chat application, for sure you definitely need real time interactions. Mm-hmm. But then it's just a dashboard kind of thing. You don't really want that.
Yeah, or if you're on a blog, you don't really want the content to be changing as you're viewing it.
yeah, totally.
I like the newer versions of Next.js are starting to get the statically generated pages, and I really like that, because I started working into Gatsby a while ago, and I was kind of playing around with it, but personally, I found that like it's good for getting started, and it's got a lot of integrations and stuff. So I think there's like a huge merit there, but as soon as I like a lot of the applications that I would be working on, I felt like we really couldn't do it with Gatsby, because you know you're rendering out, say, like, you know, thousands of pages, and if you're trying to do that every time at build time, it feels a little hard to do. But like, so Next.js, the way that they're going about it with like, you know, being able to rebuild progressively at runtime is really interesting. I know that you had a blog article about that. I was curious if you have any ideas about like what you think like the future of frameworks like that. Like, do you think that there's anything out there that you're really interested in right now? I know that I feel like you've probably looked into both.
Right. I think I have used Gatsby, I mean, for the Hello World kind of thing, but I don't know. I'm not in position to like compare Gatsby and Next, because I'm not like a heavy Gatsby user. Mm-hmm. So then I really cannot compare Gatsby with Next and what they do. Mm-hmm. But on the things about Next, actually, the reason is about, I think one of the things Gatsby has like incremental build support, right? I think so if you change a blog post, then they have like a server which incrementally builds stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the approach, the approach Next did was really interesting. The reason is you don't need any specific support on a hosting provider. So you it's baked into the framework itself. Like you can create a static page dynamically. Mm-hmm. I mean on demand. Like if you change the content, and that's really nice. I think that's the key differentiator, I guess. Like you have like everything in the framework, so then you could actually deploy it anywhere, and you could take with your own hardware if you like. Even like I don't know if people would do that these days, but it's possible. Like, you can deploy it anywhere.
Oh yeah, it makes a lot of sense for a lot of projects. Because, so for instance, like you know, a lot of like enterprises and whatnot would love to use these sorts of things, but you know, when they're given the option of you can host it on your own, you know, AWS or your own internal cloud, but we'd prefer if you put it on, say, Vercel. They wouldn't necessarily agree to that a lot of the time, whether it's you know, justified or not. I feel like there's kind of a pushback on that. So then like having the portability of like knowing that you can deploy that server in your own infrastructure is a lot nicer versus like, I feel like Gatsby's probably eventually going to go down the route of like open sourcing the incremental builds. I feel like they kind of have to, and it'll be like a huge benefit to the community. But I think the lock into the server is kind of,
I think that's the way to go. I don't feel I understand what they're doing about the commercial aspect, but at the same time, like it's a different thing. Like you have about the future. I think it's also on the roadmap. Like right now, you have in the static regeneration, so basically incremental build version of Next. You have like kind of like a like have a cache timeout to regenerate the page. But then in the future, there'll be like where you can like do a webhook kind of thing. So then you can automatically rebuild the like, based on the server. Then from the clients, I mean, from the end users, they will always get the updated version anyway, all the time. I think that would be a killer product. And I think there are some challenges doing that. So let's say, I think if Vercel wants to like build that feature out of the box, so actually they could add support for the Vercel platform quite easily. But the problem would be like having to trying to add that functionality to the framework itself, Next.js framework, because like let's say you're running the same application in multiple servers outside of the Vercel, so then you need to have some communication layer between all these servers to like route the webhook kind of thing. I think that's why it's kind of like a delayed project. So then you need to find out a way to do that. Yeah, I don't know how are any involved with the project itself, like trying to do that. But I think that's the idea set. Like, so trying to add that feature to the framework first, and then try to like, yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can imagine. Like, I hadn't even thought of that. But yeah, it's built to be distributed right off the bat, and like Gatsby has an advantage there where all it exports is static files that you're serving. There's no server to deal with. So if you're rebuilding, you just have to trigger it on your one rebuild server, in your one build server. But if you're doing it with Next, it's almost like, so part of it can be dynamically generated because you don't necessarily know the content at build time all the time. And then you're trying to also then carry that across all of your different instances of the application as you're trying to scale it up. So it's interesting. So did you find that when you're working on Vercel that they're like, because you were working on some of the infrastructure stuff, what are some of like the unique challenges that you're facing there that like you wouldn't encounter as like if you're just doing freelance and let's say you're just deploying a single server or you're using like Galaxy or something to host it, you don't necessarily need to deal with that spinning up of things. I'm curious if there's anything.
I didn't exactly get the point. I have a question. Oh. Like, what do you mean? Like,
So like when you're, so like, let's say I'm working on a single, like an application developer, like I'm working on a website for a client. I deploy it. Let's say I use those systems. I don't necessarily have to deal with, it's kind of like the benefit of having like a Vercel or whatever, right? I don't have to deal with the nuances of, where it deploys to managing multiple different servers and making sure everything's up to date.
Right. I got it. Like, I think like, I think nobody really wants to like manage stuff, but I'm basically like, so let's say I'm a web developer. So I don't really need to worry about how servers going to work. Like I just want like create a web application, then I deploy that. And that's why actually Heroku was really popular. So basically, so you could build a simple like node or they started with Ruby on Rails app and simply deploy to them, and they will take up the scaling, hosting, and everything. So then that's the same episode Vercel did, and then they did for the lambdas and static, basically lambdas. So I think that's the future, I guess. I think you don't really want to like manage stuff you don't really want to do. I think that's the reason, and I think that's what Netlify is doing the same thing, and. I think it's the future. And even with the databases right now, we have like we have Firebase, and a lot of people really want to use that Firebase because they don't want to like mess around with the actual database. And at the same time, we have new stuff like Fauna, which is like I think, and also like CMSs, and they're so popular because the people want really easy things to do. They don't really want to manage. I think in the future everything will be managed. It's a tough job.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I guess like managed services are kind of it. You have a cost to it, but it saves you so much time that it's probably almost always worth it. I've definitely tried to, you know, build applications where like I just try to do everything myself because we're like, oh no, we don't have the budget for a $50 a month database. But then, you spend, let's say, a few weeks building it and you're already well over budget.
Yeah, I think if you're starting out, I think it's really nice to do things like that, trying to experiment how things work. Mm. But I think maybe not something you do in all the time. For example, I'm not very familiar with MongoDB because I was using it for a long time, and I actually try to manage it in a lot of clusters of MongoDB with Kajira. Mm-hmm. And then I know ins and out about everything about MongoDB and then how I can tune that. But even today, I don't really want to host it myself. I use their hosted solution, MongoDB Atlas. The reason is I don't have time to work on those stuff because I know it's possible to do, but when there's a problem, then I have to go through and do these stuff. So it's better someone could do those stuff for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the story of managed. But still, it's really nice to learn how things work, and it helps me to help us to do.
Definitely. And I feel like it also helps once you get into those managed services or when you're deploying things, let's say if you're just using AWS or something like that, you're not fully managed. It helps to know that stuff. Setting up my own Mongo database, and I wasn't working at the scale where, we had thousands of instances or even dozens or anything like that. But just setting up more than one MongoDB database in different regions and then trying to sync the data is kind of complicated. At least I found it very, very difficult to get set up. And then it makes you see the value, I guess, right? And also you kind of have an idea of how it actually is working in the background, I guess.
Yeah. But that thing, I think still Mongo is the only DB you, I think, no, it's really hard to say only, but it's one of the best platform that you have all the scaling capability inside the database. So then if you think about sharding and the stuff with Postgres, then you have to get things from some other places and create proxies and so on. Hmm. So with Mongo, everything is built in and you could actually do it yourself, but I don't think anyone would do that themselves personal level. I mean, if they've been a hobby project kind of thing, I'm not a hobby project, it's team is small, I don't think they would do that themselves.
So early on, and I guess today even, you've been really exceptionally good at building a community. I know that some of the people even in the Meteor community, when you left, they were just like, oh no, Meteor's dead. I'm really curious, how you go about creating content. Is it just out of curiosity, or do you think about other people? How do you do that?
I know what you're talking about, this community. Then when I left, then some people came with me. I think that was not intentional, and I don't actually blame them or blame myself for doing that, but I think that was not something I wanted to do. It's happened anyway. Some people didn't like that, and it's a story. About how creating content, I think the reason I am doing that, if I'm writing something, especially technical content, I want to go deeper and I'm trying to understand what maybe the everything does. Then I experiment with my local machine and trying to reproduce things and so on. Then I try to create this content. I try to explain it in a plain language and maybe add some examples. And then I try to create them. That's no special secret of creating content, but I try to try everything myself by myself and try to explain in a clean language. Maybe that's the reason. About creating communities, I didn't actually create a sort of community recently. or maybe like involved with the community. But I started right now. I tried like more active on Twitter, and I'm sharing stuff. Yeah, it's really interesting to do that. I think I really enjoy if someone likes my article or so. So then if, yeah, that's the whole thing.
Cool. Yeah, I guess. And so like with that sort of thing, do you have like a system around it, or you just do it when you feel like you don't have like a schedule for yourself or anything like that?
Yeah, I think I try to stick with the schedule to like create blog posts. Initially it was like, currently I was trying to do once every week, but then at the same time, and right now I have my own next year's course. Then I was creating content for that. So then I missed that target. I think having the goal should be that should be really interesting. Like you stick with something and then you continue with that. I think it is something we should do anyway, mm-hmm. like time boxing everything. So then you could do more if you do that. But at the same time, like, I think we should not like create content just for like creating for sake. I'm like, so we should try to investigate stuff and create content.
Yeah.
And another reason about my how I create content, actually, so you have documentation on for all the projects. Mm-hmm. So when I'm trying to create content, I'm not trying to like go through the documentation and recreate that in a different language. But I'm trying to like go deeper and maybe find out things which are not available in the documentation, and maybe some people have problems with that. Then I try to create content based on that. So it will be new content. So you don't have that kind of content anywhere. So then that's a way to differentiate yourself. And it's really hard to do, like trying to find cases like that. But mm-hmm. then if you find something like that, if you create content out of that, yeah, that will be really good. So then people will love that.
Yeah, I like that idea because for instance, you had an article recently about the Next.js, like how the static site generation stuff works. And even the document, like I read through the documentation, I was trying to understand like how everything worked together. And then it's more or less there, but it's all technically written out, and it's more focused around like, this is what you'll do. And I like that your article kind of just said, okay, well, this is what actually happens behind the scenes. And you had an example of each possible situation, which is, I don't know, it was just really useful. so that was, I like what they're saying there. Like it's kind of just like adding more information to what's already available. And yeah, that's really great. I love that. Is there anything else that you might want to talk about?
I think we talk about a lot of things, and anyway, I like give some trying to like give some ideas, right now there are some full stack frameworks. I think it's really interesting to see frameworks like that, and maybe you could, I'm not asking to like go use them right now, but I think I should be really nice to focus on them, what they're trying to do. And there are three things I have come up with this few weeks. Mm-hmm. One thing is Redwood.js. So it's you can think about a Ruby on Rails for JavaScript. So that's mm-hmm. one project. And there's another one called Blitz. Basically, it's the same idea, but they use Next behind the scene. So then they can get all the benefits of Next.js.
Ooh, I like that.
But at the same time, they have to like struggle with the problem with Next. Not exactly problem, but the problem specific their approach. Hmm. Then they have to deal with the Next rules. So that's one project. Hmm. Second project, and there's a new one. I saw that in the Redwood.js community last night, I guess. It's called Bison. Bison. It's also using Next.js and use Nexus and for the GraphQL layer, and although all these projects using Prisma as a data layer, mm-hmm. I think those three projects will be really interesting to see in the next coming months what they're trying to do, and it will be really cool.
Very cool. I love it. It's I think that I'll definitely have to check these out and share them around. But And have you used all of these a little bit?
Yeah, I tried both Blitz and Redwood, and I actually discussed with some of the core people at the community. But the Bison is something really new. I didn't know about the like people who create that. I just got the news. And well, the interesting thing was like so basically, even though these are competing projects, and they actually like talk to each other in one way or another, like in different forums. And that's something I really interested in. Like, you have competing projects, but at the same time you try to communicate with each other, and that's open source. Like, that's how we build projects. That's interesting.
Yeah. I love it. It's not, because at the end of the day, an open source project isn't necessarily like, it's not a winner take all type thing, right? It's Meteor JS can exist, and so can Ruby on Rails, or even like, I guess Blitz now and Redwood looks interesting because I like the idea of being able to reuse like a vertical slice of your code, like what you were saying. It'll save so much time.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, did you have anything else that you, any other projects or anything that you're looking into?
Right. One of the projects I really actually excited about is Next.auth. So it's a authentication layer for Next.js. So basically, you can add a simple npm package and that's one API route, and then that's all. Then you have like a lot of like capabilities like at the authentication system. So you could add any social authentication login system. Maybe password based, and it's something I think it's even a little bit simpler than to set up than Auth0 in a way, but it's not like exactly Auth0 has more functionality, but for the initial setup, like Next.auth is really amazing. So that's something you should check out, like if you're building Next.js. It's a authentication setup, and there's a way you can even use with Auth0 if you want to do that as well.
Very cool. Yeah, because that's it's funny actually. One of my previous workplaces is actually trying to do something similar, and I think they're just trying to do that like reusable auth endpoint for any app that they're building. So maybe okay. I'll point them at Next.auth.
Nice. Awesome.
That's cool. If you were to talk to a new developer who is, let's say, earlier in their career or just getting started, and they, let's say they want to kind of go down the same route, you know, they want to be able to get into open source, but they also want to be able to maybe start their own company, client work, all of those sorts of things. Like, what advice would you have to people really early on that you haven't really heard a lot?
Right. I think this is the like quite unpopular thing. Maybe not everyone try to do. So like there are so many new people coming to all the places. Like, so then it's really hard. Like, so even do open source things, it's really hard to like try to like get notified. So then the way you can actually get around with this, actually trying to like create something original, like trying to find out the problem that nobody actually solved, and then maybe create a solution around that. Maybe talk about that problem, and that's how you actually can get into any place. So that's how I think about that. Trying to create blogs, maybe videos, things which people really want to know about, but there are no content around that. So that's how you can actually like win the race.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Arnoda. Sure. This has been great.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for having me in the talk. Yeah. That's really interesting.